So we left off last week on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph. I just, in request to a comment last week, I will, when we finish, not today, it may take a few more shiurim, but when we're finished sort of this subsection of the parak, which deals really with fruits, that's what we're dealing with now, Bori Pri Ha'etz. It's easy to get lost in the middle of all this Gemara, but we're really dealing with the Bracha Bori Pri Ha'etz. So when we're done, I think I will actually bring in for you the Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Berurah, just to sort of go over all of those little pieces. So we may be talking about a lot of things, and some may walk away feeling, one second, okay, what bracha am I making on this? And lots of interesting ideas. Some are truly halacha lemaaseh, and some are not. I think I have some students who make kind of funny brachas that I don't even make just because we learned this 15 years ago. And so they walked away, and maybe I wasn't clear enough that this is true theoretically, but I don't drink coffee, but if I did, I wouldn't make a Bori Pri Ha'etz, even though you really should theoretically make a Bori Pri Ha'etz and so on. So those are the kinds of things that when we kind of finish the sugya, we'll wrap things up and go back there. Now, I'm going to actually hand these out, and this
is...
Do you
not drink coffee because you're not sure what it
says? No, I have to wash it, Ron, every time I want to drink coffee. I wash it out now. I actually don't drink coffee. It doesn't agree with me, and I've tried to not make it a habit, but. I am married to an avid coffee drinker, one who teaches a course about coffee as well. But nonetheless. Now, the one note before we begin the next piece in the Gemara, I admit to being a bit confused. What I have handed out to you and what Lenny sent out an email last week is a Xerox, a single page, from the late Professor Yehuda Felix's work known as HaTzomeach V'Chai B'Mishnah. He has two works, a Chai V'Tzomeach B'Torah, which is fauna and fauna and flora. Fauna and flora in the Torah, and I think HaTzomeach V'Chai B'Mishnah, which is flora and fauna in the Mishnah. He had to name them reverse just to make us confused. Anyway, he was a professor of botany, I believe, at Hebrew U for many, many years. He passed away, I don't think so long ago. And he wrote a lot. This is a really remarkable work, The Flora and Fauna in the Mishnah. I think it was originally published as an addendum to some edition of Sefer Zraim calling Maros HaMishnah, and really was to show people, if you're learning Sefer Zraim, it's very difficult to understand if you don't know what the particular fruits are, or if you don't know how they grow, particularly those that grow only in Eretz Yisrael. Now, the truth is, I suspect that if we're dealing with things that grow in the United States as well, most of us would have no idea what it looks like when it grows. But nonetheless, certainly if it's in Eretz Yisrael, so it's a bit difficult to know. One of the things that I found challenging when I taught this some 15 years ago, and I find challenging as I am going over this again, preparing this again, is some aspects do not exactly seem to correspond perfectly. We're going to spend, at least today, talking about something called the caper bush. You can find it in the supermarket. I don't know anybody makes any recipes with caper berries. There are actually two different things. There are capers and caper berries. There are four things that are listed in the Braisa that we're going to see, the Braisa or the Mishnah, four different parts of the plant, which might have been edible. Now, two have a bracha bari pri adama, two have a bracha bari pri eitz. And I have found it very... On the same plant, yeah. The caper bush is a bush that grows. It's a shrub probably. It doesn't grow very tall. It grows often on top of walls, next to walls, in the Mediterranean basin. And it typically, you eat that pickled, both the capers and the caper berries. I think the capers are the real fruits. I may have it backward. I forget which is which. Capers should be the bigger ones. And you have to ripen, you have to harvest them before I think they harden. And then the caper, as far as I understand, and this is the challenge we're going to face and we're going to have to ignore, the caper berries are actually the flower buds before they open up. And those, you pick them when they're small, and you pickle them, and those are also, they're used in various kinds of dishes. And the problem is that the way the Gemara is going to see it, one of them, the avionos, are the main fruits of the bush. I think those are what are called the capers. Again, I'm sorry if I have this backwards in the English way. I think I put a note for myself. No, those are the caper berries. Those are the caper berries. Good thing I wrote that note. I go Googling for pictures, but the pictures themselves are not actually clear enough. But Google, caper images for the caper berry bush, and you'll see a lot of this. But the caper berries are the big ones. Those are supposedly the real fruit, and the unopened buds are the capers. Now, the capers are referred to as kafrisin, which obviously is cognate, the capers and kafrisin. And from the Gemara, it would appear, Rashi says it first, and I read Rashi and think, well, maybe Rashi probably never saw a caper bush, so maybe he didn't really understand. But Rashi is most undoubtedly correct. When we continue on to the next Amud, they understand that the capers are a shomer to the caper berries. A shomer lepri means something that protects it. So Rashi describes it as a klipos, like some type of a shell around it that originally could be eaten, and inside of it would be the aviona, which is the actual fruit. If you look at Felix's diagram, it doesn't appear to be so. What he defines, he doesn't talk about our sugya. He often has a paragraph, which he does here, just describing mostly the botanical aspects of it. If you look at the bottom, number 4 on the chart, that's supposed to be the caper berries, the avionos, which are the real fruit. And then you can see the opening flower, number 3, that he labels as the perach. That's not going to be spoken about in the Gemara. But what he marks as number 2, which is towards the bottom, that's an unopened flower bud. And as you eat it before it opens, that's not really a shomer to the avionus. I don't really quite know how to put this together. So even though I hate doing this, especially when you're learning something that should be based in physical realia, we're just going to have to pretend a little bit. We're going to have to do what we did when I was a student doing Yoredeya. Back in my day, you had to do Hilchos Shechita. So, not that any of us ever saw a cow, but we were very familiar with the Platonic cow. So, or the platonic cow that we imagined in our heads, as we were learning Hilchos Shechita. So that's what we'll have to suspend a little bit of, I don't want to say disbelief, but sort of not being fully in touch. Similarly, by the way, I haven't quite figured out we're going to learn on the next, I'm on a pomegranate. So I don't know how many of you have ever seen a pomegranate tree. Growing the fruits, or you could look at a pomegranate picture. Now, on a pomegranate, there are actually two sides. The part that's attached to the tree that all you end up seeing when you buy it typically is a little hole, tiny little hole at one end. And on the other end is this like crown. It's like, it's not even smooth. That kind of opens up. I believe that's called the nates. The other side is called the pitma, the part that's attached to the tree. But I cannot quite, the Gemara talks about the nates falling off at some point. So I went into the fridge. We still have a bunch of pomegranate Costco pomegranates, and the nate is still there. Now, I don't know if part of it falls off, if it tends to shrivel up. So I can't, it's very hard to figure out some of this realia. So if I figure out any more in the future, I'll be happy to come back to you, but I have been trying. So the Gemara that we had last read, so again on Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, the Gemara had said, the Gemara had quoted a machlokas about eating flour. So we're actually up to line number 4 of the wide lines on Lamed Vav Amud Aleph near the end. So now the Gemara talks about a korah. A korah is a heart of palm. And if you eat the korah, what bracha do you make? Now the truth is, the Gemara doesn't say it here, but I know elsewhere it's noted, and I think this is botanically correct. If you take the heart of the palm, you will kill the palm tree. Today, when you go into we get in Costco, the double pack of the hearts of palm, they didn't kill that many palm trees to create those hearts of palm. I think they grow them and harvest them very young. They grow them specifically for the hearts of palm. But if you take the heart out of a person, you kill the person. If you take the heart out of a palm tree, apparently you kill it as well. They typically would not have eaten it because it wasn't economically productive. So the Gemara says, Korah, Rav Yehuda Omer Bari Priyadama Ushmuel Amar Shakol Niyeh Bedvara. We have a similar machlokas as we had in the previous section about the flower. So Rav Yehuda says you make a Bari Priyadama because it grows from the ground. And why don't you make a Bari Priyates? The answer is because it's not the fruit of the tree. The fruit of a palm is a date. You might eat the heart of palm, but that's not the fruit of the tree, but it grows from the ground. If it would be normal to eat, we might label it as Bari Pri Ha'adama. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. And Shmuel says it's Shakol Niyeh B'dvaro. And we'll see the continuation why Shmuel says that.
Rav Yehuda Amar Borei Peri HaAdama Perahu. It is a Perah. Ushmuel Amar Shehakol Nieh Bidvaro. Hoil V'sofo L'Hakshos. Because if left alone, if you don't harvest it, eventually it just turns very hard. Now, there's a little more to say, because that, okay, but it's not very hard right now. And this would be theoretically a very important concept, which is, would that mean anything that you harvest now and it's edible, but if left alone, it would turn hard and not be edible? And I presume, not that it would harden when the tree is dead. Everything is going to harden eventually if you don't harvest it. It will desiccate, it will dry out, it will turn hard. But it means in the normal course of maintaining the tree and harvesting the fruit, the korah is going to turn hard. So Shmuel says, don't make a shahak on it because it's not considered apparently a pre. But the Gemara has more to say on this. Amar le Shmuel the Rabbi Yehuda. Shmuel said to his student, Rabbi Yehuda. If you're wondering why Shmuel has no title, I don't know, but Shmuel never quite got smicha. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have smicha either. Rabbi Yehuda is a Babylonian Amora. But Rebbe wanted to give Shmuel, who was served as his doctor, he wanted to give him smicha, but he somehow never managed to arrange at a time that he could give him smicha. There's a Gemara in Bava Metzia, I think it's not Pei Bava Medeis, there's a Sefer, what's called the Sefer? Sefer Adam or something like that. It was the book where all things would be revealed, and apparently Shmuel Yarchina'a is his name. I forget what he would be called, but Rav Lo Yiskare. He wouldn't actually have the title Rav, he wouldn't have smicha. So Shmuel was Rabbi Yehuda's Rebbe, but we never say Rav Shmuel. He's just known as Shmuel. So Shmuel says to his student Rav Yehuda, Shinina, sharp one, Kivaseich Mistabra. What you're saying would make sense. The hot snown, so full of hakshos. Snown, a radish, will eventually harden. Umavarchina ala, bari priadala. It's still considered a pre. Now the Gemara responds, not Shmuel. And Shmuel, it doesn't seem like Shmuel changed his opinion. He just said what you're saying would seem logical. The Gemara says Velohi, and it's wrong. That logic is wrong. Sinon nate inshi adaita de pugla, dikla lonit nati inshe adaita de kora. No, the whole point of planting the radish, I mean, the radish has two parts. So, that one of the few things I managed not to kill in our garden that I no longer plant was radishes. My wife likes radishes. I'm not keen on the sharp radish, but I ate the green stuff that grew out of the ground. So we split it. I had green stuff for salad. She had radishes for pickling the radishes. So you can eat the both parts of it. So I guess I didn't leave it long enough, but the radish part eventually will turn hard, even though you have the green that you can eat. So the Gemara says that even though the radish will eventually harden, because people plant it for the pugla, they plant it for the bulb, or whatever it's, what we call botanically. So therefore, that's why it's considered a pre. Whereas people do not plant the palm tree for the purposes of eating the heart. And therefore, it's not, and the real issue is not whether or not you want to call it a pre. The question is whether people typically intend to eat that product. If it's something that people intend to eat that grows out of the ground, even if it's not the primary fruit of that particular thing, or it's not a tree, you make a borei pri hadama. A radish is obviously not a tree. A date palm is a tree, but if it grows from the ground and people plant it to eat it, plant it with the intention of eating that amongst whatever else they might eat, so you make at least a borei pri hadama. In some cases, again, if it's a tree and it's the primary fruit of the tree, then you make a borei pri ha'etz. But if not, you make a borei pri hadama. But in the case of the korah, people do not plant it intending to eat that. Therefore, you do not make a bracha borei pri hadama. You just make a shahakol if it's something that you're eating now and you are getting benefit from, you're getting hana'a from. Okay. So now the Gemara. So I think those hearts of palm, what you would make a borei pri hadama on. Yeah, I don't think you would make a borei pri because it's not the ikar of the tree, of that plant, but it is planted with that intention. I think you make a borei pri hadama. Yes.
The ikar of that particular plant is the heart.
Yes, it still would make a borei pri. I don't think you would make a borei pri on it. I'll have to see if any of the contemporary posts have been written on this, because I think this is probably fairly recent that you have, you know, large-scale plantings I believe that they're very small trees. They don't, obviously, they're never allowed to grow because you kill them. So.
The fruit part of the trees has the seeds, and the hearts don't have any seeds, so you would be able to grow.
So let's read the next line, Gemma. You'll see why I'm not 100% sure. You might be right. It might be true, but I don't know enough about the anatomy of the botany of the caper bush, but we'll see. The Gemara is now about to invoke it. So now the Gemara says, wait, is that true, what you just said to sort of push off Shmuel's defense of Rabbi Yehuda. V'chol heicha delonate inshi adaita dahachi lo mevarchin hala. Is that really true that you don't make a bracha of, let's say, again, bori pri eitz, bori pri adama, just because people don't intend? V'areitzlaf denati inshi adaita depircha. The reason why people plant a caper bush is for the pircha. Rashi says the pri, the aviyona. That's not what I would have assumed botanically here, because I think the pri, the perach, I should say, the pircha is actually what the Gemara will call the kafrisin. But the kafrisin is what the Gemara is wondering about. Let me read the next line, then make you understand. One second. What's the correction? It might be a brisa, I think. No, I know. Is it a brisa? Yes. Vitanya, almine nitzpa. Nitzpa is the term for the caper bush. Al ha'olin vi al hatzmaros. On the leaves, which people typically don't eat leaves, but apparently do eat the leaves of the caper bush. The al hatzmaros, this is the part that I can't quite figure out. The tzmaros you see in the picture, number one, they it's next to the leaf. It's that small thing. But I thought that those are just unopened. I thought those are capers. So I don't know, the tzmaros or something else that grow out of the stem. So al olam ve'al tzmaros omer borei pri ha'adama. You may call adama on them. The al ha'avyonos ve'al kafrisin omer borei pri ha'etz. So on the avionos and the kafrisin, that's the real fruit. So the real fruit are those two things, which again, you can, in the diagram, the aviona I think is not debated, and the way he describes the kafrisin, those are the unopened buds. So what you see from the from this Gemara is that even things that the havamin of the Gemara, when it asks the question, the olim and the tomorrows, its assumption is that those are not why you plant the bush, which is true. You plant the bush primarily for the fruit. The fruit right now is being described as both the avionos and the kafrisin. So why would you make a bari pri adama on the leaves, on the olin, and on the tomorrows? That's not why people plant it. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda is correct. Well, you see, more important, you see that just because that's not why you plant it, and I believe, by the way, that the tomorrows eventually, I think they do harden, if I'm not mistaken, if that's not what you plant the bush for, the plant for, then you should not be making a bari pri adama. You should be making a shahako, if you were correct in defending Shmuel's position. So the Gemara says, no, not true. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Tzlaf nati inshi adaita deshuta. The tzlaf, the caper bush, people plant for all of those things, even the leaves. They do plant it for that. Now, granted, the olim, the leaves, and the tzmaros, these little berries, that's not the fruit of the caper bush. Therefore, you make only hadama on it. But people do plant it with the intent of eating those. Therefore, you make a bari pri hadama. But dikla, the palm tree, lo nati inshi adaita dekor. They don't plant it with that intent. The afal gad, the kalse Shmuel Rabbi Yehuda, even though Shmuel praised Rabbi Yehuda, he called him shinina, sharp one, dochasa kevase de Shmuel. So we pass through like Shmuel. Which means that what emerges from the Gemara is that if something is not planted with the intention of eating a particular thing, you do not make a bari pri adama, you make a shahakol. If you plant it with the intent of eating that, even if it's not the primary fruit, then it gets a bari pri adama. And if it's the primary fruit, and it also happens to qualify as a tree, as whatever is called ha'etz, that we will talk about a little later in the parak. I'll give you the usual definition, the one the Gemara gives, the Rishonim usually quote, is anything where the wood, whatever it is that the fruits eventually, the new fruits grow out of, if the geza remains in the ground, and that is the thing out of which all the new fruit comes the next year, that's called an eitz, which is why blueberries, a blueberry bush, I don't know for sure, blackberries and raspberries, I think also grow in similar bushes, that's why those are eitz. Strawberries are more complicated because I don't know exactly, the strawberries have runners, but I don't know what regenerates and doesn't.
But the caper bush is the very same thing. It dies back at some point in the year, and then it grows again. But the basic, the wood, that remains there, and that's why it's considered a tree. A tree doesn't have to be something under which you take shade, and therefore you make a bore pri ha'etz on those things that would be considered the fruit, the ikar, the primary fruit of the caper bush, which right now the Gemara seems to assume. No, this Brisa seems to assume that both the avionos and the kafrisin, the caper berries and the capers, are both considered the fruit, and therefore they are bari pri ha'etz. What's a banana?
Yeah,
I don't know. I know what we make on bananas, but I don't know why, or I don't know if it's compelling. Make ha'adama on them. We make ha'adama on bananas. There's something funny about the banana tree, but. Press me again. I have to look in. I don't think I actually explored this when I taught brachas many years ago. So I have to look into that again. Maybe before we finish fruits, I have to try to get you an answer to bananas. Unless I just come in and say, Lenny, banana is not a fruit, so I don't have to tell you now. Okay.
If you plant in, say, an etrog, and you try and use it for planting and use it for aluminium, not to eat it, so do you use your kavan to say that you therefore, if you eat it, you won't make it worth the way?
Well, I wouldn't say that because. In other words, if you plant, I would say the following. Most things are normally planted so as to eat them. So you're coming, otherwise, why would you bother? What use is it to you? What? Well, I know, but again, what are people doing with the esrog, right? It's for somebody to eat. So I would argue that when we're talking about something that grows from the tree, if it is considered the primary fruit of the tree, and if people were to plant it because they were going to eat it, that will be a bird pre-ates. So then, the same thing would hold true even if they're planting it because they want to use the fruit for some other purpose other than eating, but that is the fruit. And if you were to eat, that's what you would eat, so I would assume it's ha'etz. Okay. I don't know too many people eat esrogim. I think some people, well, it's not edible as it is, that's for sure. Assuming that our esrogim are actually even esrogim, that's a different discussion.
Make it for jelly.
Or, because if you make esrog liqueur, I shouldn't have opened up that can of worms. Sukkot time, we'll explore that issue. Yes. No. If you're really, really not sure about something, the fallback is shackle. But if you're dealing with something that grows from the ground, and you're not sure whether it's a bush, whether it's a hadama or eight, then the fallback bracha is hadama. We try to be as specific we can with the bracha, but making sure that we can actually sort of capture it properly and not be too specific. In other words, if you have a carrot and you make a bari pri ha'etz on a carrot, you're not yotzei, you have to make another bracha. If you have an apple and you make a bari pri ha'adama on an apple, you don't make another bracha. Because the bari pri ha'adama is more inclusive. Pri ha'etz is included in pri ha'adama. Pri ha'adama is not included in bro pri ha'etz. So yes, Isaac, shahakol is the bracha ha'kolelas when truly in that of whatever it might be the bracha for that particular food, you make a shahakol. But if you know that it's either bari pri ha'adama or bari pri ha'etz, then you make a bari pri ha'adama, because that will be the more inclusive one. So again, we haven't explored, the Gemara will later explore the machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim and Mishnah. You may not remember it by now. Rabbi Yehuda said that on yurakos, on let's say, Mishnah doesn't spell out, but on legumes, you would make, let's add in corn and things like that also, you make a bari pri ha'adama. But on vegetables, the Mishnah says you also make a bari pri ha'adama. Rabbi Yehuda says you make a bari minei d'shayim. Because Rabbi Yehuda likes to be more specific with brachos. Even though we don't accept Rabbi Yehuda's opinion in the specifics, we do, at least in principle, believe that there is an idea of specificity in brachos and that it's a greater shevach, it's a greater praise to God when you are more specific about, it's like, I don't know if we always think that way, but by thank you for doing something, thank you for doing that. And, you might want to be thanked specifically for what you did, not just a general thank you. So we try to be as specific as we can in terms of the brachos in thanking God. So if we don't know, if it's a suffix, then we go for shahakol. But clearly Chazal did not choose to have us have only one bracha, shahakol. For starters, they wouldn't be able to have a bracha be anymore. So that would kind of ruin things. So, anyway, but by the way, we don't have a bracha hakolelas. We don't have an all-inclusive bracha afterwards, which is why last week, I don't know if I mentioned, we did talk about this. If you were to be eat the wheat flour on the assumption that you're supposed to make a bar peidama. If you're paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, then on eating wheat flour, whatever that wheat flour is, there were two opinions what the wheat flour is, really wheat flour or something a little more edible. But if you were to argue like Rabbi Yehuda that you make a bar peidama on it, so then we shown him have a question as to what bracha achrona do you make. The Rabbeinu Tam, apparently the Rush quotes in Rabbeinu Tam's machzor, whatever that exactly is, in Rabbeinu Tam's, because they didn't have printed books then. I mean, they were handwritten machzorim, but I don't know if the Rabbeinu Tam's personal one or the one in the community. It was a tiny community, I'm sure. So in Rabbeinu Tam's machzor, there was a nusach that said that amongst the alamichy brachas, we have alamichy al kokala, al gefli al priyagafin, al eitz al priyaitz, and then it was al hadama, al priyadama. So Rabbeinu Tam's machzor had that there was a fourth version of the bracha me'in shalosh, of the abridged birchas hamazon. So apparently it's Rabbeinu Tam's opinion. Some Rishonim just say bar nefashos, and other Rishonim say it's a suffix, so you should avoid eating it standalone because you won't know what the bracha to make afterwards. Instead, have it as part of a meal, in which case the birchas hamazon, you don't need when you eat other stuff in a meal, you don't make a bracha chonon, and you make just the birchas hamazon on the primary part of the meal, the lechem, and everything else is exempted by it. But it's not, you can't, you know, if you're not sure what bracha achrona make on something, you can't make a bracha samazon on it. I'm sure some of you are very relieved to hear that too. You don't have to make a bracha samazon if you're not sure, but there is no bracha kolalas. There's no all-inclusive bracha as a bracha achrona, so that actually becomes more complicated. Okay. Yes. 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 In other words, think about the caper bush. The olim and the tamaros are not the fruit; they don't have the seeds. But you make a bar peidama, and that's not even disputed. No. You make ha'etz on the avionos and the kaprisim. It's a tree. Yeah, because you make, that's the brisa said, on the olim and tamaros ha'adama, on the kaprisim and avionos ha'etz. So it's a tree, and on the non-fruit parts of the tree, if it is planted with the intent of eating those as well, you make a bar pri hadama.
Sorry, now I'm confused. Sorry to go back. Please. Think the reason the heart of palm, because it was not the ikar, the whatever the dates or whatever would be in a palm tree.
No, it's because lo nati inshe adaited, because people don't plant it with the intent of eating it. In other words, nobody's questioning. Nobody said, Rabbi Yehuda did not say that on a korah you make a bari priya eitz. That was clear. The only thing you make a bari priya eitz on a date palm is the dates. But the question is, the korah is something that grows with the tree, and people eat it sometimes. So then he says bari priya dama. And Shmuel's response, or the Gemara's response is yes, but people, you might plan to eat parts A, B, and C of the tree. Maybe that A or A and B are the primary fruit, and you make rites on that, and C, you make a bar priyadama. But there might be D and E that people don't normally plant it with eating that, and with the intent of eating that, and therefore, if you choose to eat it, you don't make a bar priyadama, you make a shahakal. That's what ultimately Shmuel's position teaches us. So you can have three things in a fruit tree. The things that people have no intent of eating when they plant, even though it might be edible, people might be able to eat it. The things that people intend to eat, but are not actually the primary fruit of the tree, and then the things that are the primary fruit of the tree.
So the heart of palm is that middle category?
No. The heart of palm is the first category. People do not have intent when they plant. It's not only not a fruit, when people plant, not our hearts of palm. Correct, and that's how we paskin. In other words, the question that Dr. Schwartz asked was, what about hearts of palm today that are planted and harvested in bulk for this day? Get them small.
So
that's Hadaba. But the Gemara's heart of palm normally would have been Shahakol. Yeah, I don't know if it's you personally, not like, but I think if it's a broad enough practice that this is the way it's done, so then
what's something in that middle category that we eat regularly?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I have to go into the fruit store and start telling. He wants to have something. Hearts of palm would be a good example the way it's done today. Right, the way it's grown for that purpose, but not the fruit of the tree. Whatever else there is, I'm not familiar with, my palate is relatively limited. It's what's on the store. Not even everything in the store.
Good question. Maple syrup.
So it's definitely not a bari priya eitz, that's for sure, because it's not the fruit of the tree. I'm gonna be clever with you, which is, do you drink maple syrup? It's always a tough L. It's always a tough L. I can't blame them, but it's yes, yes, right. But honey, there's no shyla because it, you know, it's a shackle because it's created by the bees. So my inclination would be to think that nobody intends, as yummy as it might be, nobody intends to eat it straight. If it were a drink, the Balei Tosfos would say, oh, it's a shackle, because all shtia is a shackle. That's a topic we're going to eventually explore. So the answer is that maple syrup, you won't make a bracha on. It's always going to be a tata. Again, you typically, with honey, you don't normally eat it straight. It's almost always a tata. But date honey, we'll talk about it. Date honey is going to wind up also being a shackle. Well, let's wait till, for mashkin, we have to wait till we get there. That's a fascinating sugya in its own right. Okay, so, yes.
Another question. I mean, potatoes will make your own food.
Yes.
I've seen them grow in the ground. But, you know, in the mountainous areas of Peru, potatoes grow in a very low bush. They taste like a potato. They look like a potato. I mean, they're different colors.
Well, I would, but is that really the same species as a potato or something that's like it but a little different?
It tastes like it. They call it a potato. I've actually seen it in the market at Fairway, and I just wondered, you know, and I automatically...
My inclination would be that if you know that it grows on something which is a shrub that the wood is there all the time, and it just sprouts, you know, new leaves every season, that's right. That's right. Yes. Okay. So maybe that's why they call it tapuah adama. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. It might be. I have to wonder botanically whether it's actually the same thing. Maybe it's related, but that sounds a little too, I'm going to say fishy is not the word I want to hear, but okay.
Okay, thank you.
So, okay. So now the Gemara, now that we've opened up the can of tzlaf, now we have to deal with tzlaf. So just keep in mind three things that it matters. Three areas that tzlaf has an impact on, or three things that you have to deal with when you have capers, caper berries, or whatever else you're eating. Question number one is, what is the bracha on any part of the plant? Question number two is, do you have to separate trumas and maisers from any given part of the plant? Question number three is, do the laws of orla apply to any particular given part of the plant? Now, each of these three things could theoretically follow its own rules. As we're going to see, if you turn the page for one moment, Lamed Vav Amud Beis, in the parentheses, right before the lines get medium width, the end of the narrowest lines, it says, V'hilchas Kemar Baravashi, we haven't read him yet, V'zorikis Avionos V'yochalas HaKaprisim. Mar Baravashi lived in Babel, and when there was a tzlaf bush that was Orla, that was in its first 3 years, he threw the avionos away because he weren't allowed to eat them; they were orla. But he ate the kafrisin, and now, since the kafrisin are not considered a fruit with respect to orla, because orla are the fruits, the aratem orla soas prio, legabe brachos nami lav peraninu. Therefore, it's not considered a fruit with respect to brachos, and therefore veloma barchin and ala bori prio eats ala bori prio adama. We don't make a bori eats, but we make a bori prio adama. We have a very nice conclusion, except for, as the Mishnah pointed out, this is not part of the Gemara. It happened a lot in this parak. There were a lot of halachic psakim that are assumed to be from the Halachos Gedolos, one of the major, relatively early Gaonic works. We're not really sure who wrote it exactly, a couple of possible culprits. And the halacha, this passage from the Halachos Gedolos, not all Rishonim agree with this. Tosfos disagrees with this. The Raiva disagrees with this. The Rambam and the Rif do paskal in this way, as it does in Shulchan Aruch. We'll come back to this line, but I want to just highlight one aspect of it, which is, here, at least the Halachos Gedolos is claiming that the standard of fruit for Orla is the same standard as fruit for a tree. Now, when it comes to Trumas and Maisers, well, this is complicated. Do you have to separate Trumas and Maisers from an apple tree? An orange tree? So most Rishonim assume that the obligation of separating Trumas and Maisros, Midda Oraisa, only on a scriptural level, applies to only three things: Dagon, Tirosh, and Yitzhar. We normally translate Dagon as grain, Tirosh as wine, Yitzhar as olive oil. The Ramban in his Perush on Chumash suggests, in Parshas Korach, suggests that it might be that even grapes and olives are not chay of min HaTorah, there's no obligation of Trumas and Meisers of tithing them in HaTorah, only midrabanan, unless they are converted into olive oil and wine. And the word Dagon, by the way, which we translate to mean grain, actually refers to the finished grain, the pile of grain. I believe, I haven't found any of the dictionaries, any of the works of Semitics that state this, but I think it's very, very clear from a few passage usages in the Gemara. The word Dagon is cognate with the word Dagar in Aramaic. Dagara in Aramaic is a pile. And we know, Chazal talk about that, you're only chayav min HaTorah to separate Trumas and Meisers when you have miruach hakri, when you've separated the kernels out and you smooth out the pile. So Dagon itself refers to the finished product. Dagon, Tirosh, and Yitzhar. So I should say the processed product is the better way of describing it. So most Rishonim, with the exception of the Rambam, believe that the obligation to separate Trumas and Meisers, which does exist by pretty much by all fruits, and by vegetables, almost all Rishonim assume that it's Drabanan. Only Dagon, Tirosh, and Yitzhar have a Torah obligation. The Rambam is the outlier. The Rambam says that all fruit trees also, with the exception of the Gemara says that that the Meiser of Charuvim, of a Buxer tree, of a Carob tree, some of us are old enough, not all of us, some of us old enough to remember if you went to Yeshiva Day School and Lag BaOmer, Tu B'Shvat, they gave us the Buxer, which I don't think anybody ate. But it was probably cheap. But the Meiser Charuvim, the Gemara says, is only Drabanan. So most Rishonim say yes, because all fruits outside of maybe grapes and olives are Drabanan. The Rambam says no, because Charuvim was generally fed to the animals. And since it's Machal Behema primarily, there's no obligation of Trumas and Meisers min HaTorah. But bottom line, one of these facts to just file away in your head, you should always know this. This is a basic piece of Bikias, is that most Rishonim hold that the obligation of Trumas and Meisers scripturally is only Dagon, Tirosh, V'Yitzhar. The exception, the primary exception, is the Rambam, that it applies in addition to all fruit trees, minus the Buxer tree. So the Rishonim here, when we're dealing with Tzlach, leaving aside the Rambam, so most Rishonim will say that the Trumas and Meisers of the Tzlach are only rabbinic, only Drabbanan. Okay, but one is obligated to separate it. Now, it's not limited to Pri Ha'etz. There's also an obligation of separating Trumas and Meisers from vegetables. So, putting aside, so clearly the standard of Pri Ha'etz and Pri Ha'adamah, that distinction is not really going to matter with respect to Meisers. It's irrelevant. It'll be chayiv and obligated to separate the Meisers in principle either way. If it's considered a edible product of the botanical entity, you would expect to separate Trumas and Meisers from it. But right now, in this line, which is not the Gemara, it's the Halachos Gedolos, an equation is made between the status of the pre with respect to bracha and the status of the pre with respect to orla. And since, as we're going to see in the case coming up, according to one opinion, the only parts of the bush that's subject, of this caper bush that's subject to orla, are the avionos, the caper berries, that's the only thing which you make a bari pri ha'etz on. But that's not in agreement with the braisa that we just read. The braisa that we just read, that the Gemara is about now to start, is going to explore now, that braisa assumes that on the olim and the tamaros you make ha'adama, on the leaves and whatever these tamaros are, I don't know, you make ha'adama, but on the capers and the caper berries, on the kafrisin and the avionos, you make ha'etz. So now the Gemara says the following. Amar et the two dots, back on Daf Lamed Vav Amid Aleph, about halfway through the wider lines. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Slav Shel Orla Bechutzala Aretz, Zorek Es Ho Avionos, the Ochel Es HaKafrisin. So he said that if you have a caper bush in Chutzala Aretz, let's say you're in Turkey or you're in Cyprus and you have caper bushes growing. And you want to eat them, but they were planted within the last 3 years, so they're subject to the rules of Orla. So you cannot eat the avionos, but you're allowed to eat the kafrisin. Okay, so that means The Torah says that Kisavo la aretzun etatem kol eitz ma'achol va'araltem or laso es pirio. You enter the land, you plant a fruit tree, you will set aside pirio. Kaprishalo, its fruit, you will designate that as prohibited, it is orla. So that applies only to the avionos, not to the kafrisin. So the Gemara says, lememra, the avionos peire the kafrisin la peire, that would imply, pretty clear, that the avionos are considered a pre, but not the kafrisin. So the Gemara says, but that's not true, viriminu. We have a brisa that contradicts what Rav said. Almine nitzpa, we just read this 6 lines ago. Al ha'olim ve'atmaros omer borei pri adama, va'al ha'vionos v'al ha'kafrisin omer borei pri ha'etz. So that would seem to be pretty clear. If you're making a borei pri ha'etz on it, that's considered pre. So the Gemara says, hu da omar ki Rabbi Akiva. No, Rav, that Rabbi Yehuda quoted, he follows the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, which is, v'tzan, Rabbi Eliezer omer, slaf mis'aser, Tamaros va'avionos v'kafrisin. Rabbi Eliezer says that when you separate maisers, you separate from everything except for the olin. He would say that the olin are not considered a pre in any way, even if people eat it. You don't separate trumas and maisers from leaves. But everything else, that's, even the tamaros, are considered, it doesn't have to be pre ha'etz, but it's enough of something that is, that is a fruit in some sense of what is grown, that you have to separate trumas and maisers from it. And Rabbi Akiva Omer, ein misaser ela avionos bilvad. Nay, shupri, Rabbi Akiva says, nope, only the avionos. It doesn't matter if people eat the kafrisin, that's not considered free. It doesn't require a separation of trumas and maisers. So then, so we understand. Rabbi Yehuda Amarav said that if you have a slav of orlan chutz laretz, you throw out the avionos, because that's the fruit, that's araltem or la soes perio, and you can eat even the kafris. So it's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. Fine.
They're arguing over what's the fruit of the tree.
Correct. So just as a side point, and I think the Rashba discusses this, the Rashba or the Talmidei Rabbi Yonah discuss this, whose opinion is that of the Braisa, that on the olin and the Tamarim you make Ha'adama, and on the Kafris and the Avionos you make Ha'etz. Clearly not Rabbi Akiva. Is it Rabbi Eliezer's opinion? Well, it's not clear. I already preempted this, but you would have thought if it was Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, you would have to separate Trumas and Maisos from all four things. So it seemed that the Braisa is neither Rabbi Eliezer nor Rabbi Akiva, but Rabbi Yehuda certainly fits with Rabbi Akiva. But the Rashba, I believe, says no. He says what I described to you before, that the Olin, even though it grows there, that's not considered a pre in any sense that's obligated in Trumas and Maisos. So it could be that the Braisa, that you make Ha'adama on two things, and Ha'etz on two things, still is Rabbi Eliezer's opinion that you only separate Trumas and Maisos from three things. And it's not a problem, the fact that you don't separate Trumas and Maisos from the leaves, from the Olin. All right, so now the Gemara is going to explore a little bit further why Rav uttered the statement that he did. If he follows Rabbi Akiva, why doesn't he just say that we pass like Rabbi Akiva? So just a little bit of background here. I think we probably touched upon this already. In fact, I'm certain that we have. Does Orla apply outside of the land of Israel? Well, I mean, obviously, you see that it does, because Rav said you throw away the avionos in Chutz Laretz, so it does. What is the basis for Orla in Chutz Laretz? So the Mishnah in Orla says that Chadash is Noheg B'chutz La'aretz Min HaTorah. Orla is Halacha, and Kilaya Kerem is Nidivrei Sofer. So there are three agricultural mitzvahs only that apply outside of the land of Eretz Yisrael. Certainly, let me, Midoraisa. I say on everywhere in Chutz Laretz, there is an obligation of separating Trumas and Maisos if you live in Egypt, if you live in Jordan, maybe if you live in Syria. It's a rabbinic obligation that the lands, the way the Rishonim explain, the Balei HaTosfos explain, any of the lands that are geographically proximate to Israel, midrabanan, rabbinically, you have to separate Trumas and Maisos. But when we talk about these laws applying Chutz Laretz on whatever level they apply, it means in my backyard in Teaneck, New Jersey. So if I plant a tree, from seed, and somehow it produces fruit in the first 3 years. I already told you my gardening skills. You know that wouldn't happen. So if you have any particular thing that you need to kill, just give it to me to plant. It'll work.
It has to be from seed?
Well, if you plant it from an already potted tree with enough soil, the Orla clock does not restart when you put it in the ground. Right? And it's clearly, it lives in that planter for months and years sometimes. So as long as there's enough dirt to sustain it there, as let's say a storm rips the tree out of the ground. So if all that's left are the roots attached to the tree and no dirt, then when you replant it, the Orla, even it could be 10 years old producing for you eating it, the Orla clock restarts. But if it pulls with it enough dirt, enough earth, that it could survive that way. I don't know how long, but in a potted plant that survives a long time, then it doesn't restart the clock. So when you go to the nursery and you buy it, as I did with our apple tree, which 1 year produced enough apples to eat that the squirrels didn't get and whatever else. So if you, in that case, the Orla clock for 3 years doesn't restart when you transplant it into the ground. It's actually very important, halacha l'maaseh, not for me, but when you're tree nurseries, especially in Israel, knowing the specifics of these laws. So the laws of Orla do apply in Chutz Laretz. And the Gemara says that they apply halacha. That's what the Mishnah says. Everywhere. The laws of Chadash apply everywhere in Chutz Laretz according to that Mishnah, Min HaTorah. I know that's not the... I didn't tell you what Chadash is. If you haven't heard this before, some people know. The Torah says, you don't want to hear this, Josh. It takes you somewhere to get in trouble. The Torah says that we're going to read it come Pesach. I don't mean to be chauvinist here, but I don't mean to scare you, Adrian. But Pesach is only about 8 weeks away. Yeah, okay. Tu B'Shvat's coming, so that means 8 weeks to Pesach. So, and anybody else who happens to be in this room who does a lot of Pesach preparation. So, Chadash, the Torah says in Parashas Emor, which we'll read the second day of Pesach, the Torah says that before you bring the Karban HaOmer on the second day of Pesach, which is the first day of Holomoid in Israel, before you bring the Karban HaOmer, the lechem v'kali v'charmel lo sochlu ad etzem hayom hazeh. You're not allowed to eat bread and roasted kernels and caramel, whatever exactly that is, something from the grain, until that day, that the ad haviyachem es karban lo kechem, until you bring the Karban HaOmer. So therefore, any grain that grows, that's planted after Pesach, any grain that's planted after the second day of Pesach, of the five kinds of grain, cannot be eaten until next Pesach comes and they bring the Karban HaOmer. Now, even though we have no Beis HaMikdash today, so it's not the Karban HaOmer that permits us to eat the Chadash, the new grain, but the day itself, Ad Etzem HaYom HaZeh. Okay, but that might be a problem in the United States in particular, more so than anywhere else, because we have a major spring wheat crop, which is generally not planted until after Pesach. It's harvested during the summer, and it reaches the market probably in September or late August. So according to the Mishnah in Orla, the prohibition of eating from that grain, from that typically wheat, it could be barley also, that prohibition is an issa d'oraisa to eat it even Chutz Laretz, not just in the land of Israel. So some people might be sweating here a little bit until you realize that there is another opinion in the Mishnah. Almost all of the Rishonim you've ever heard of paskin that it's aser min haTorah. So does the Mechaber, so does the Ramah. The Ramah introduces one possible leniency, which doesn't apply to our spring wheat, which was, he argued that most of the barley that they were using, probably in beer, was the old barley. When you would get to it, by that point, the rove was the yashan, and therefore you could rely upon that. There is a very distinct minority opinion of Rishonim, and some achronim, who believe that we paskin that chadash does not apply in Chutz La'aretz, not even midrabanan, and a large part of Ashkenazi Klal Yisrael adopted that opinion a long time ago. So most Ashkenazim, and today most modern Orthodox Jews and most Hasidim, and probably large numbers of people in the yeshiva world, but that's the place where you have the most inroads, are not concerned about the issue of chadash. Now, they assume that if it's grain that's grown in Chutz La'aretz, it's not a problem. However, there is something that has grown in practice over the last 2+ decades of people who are makpid on yashan, who will not eat even from grain in Chutz Laretz until Pesach has passed. In which case, you have to know what things contain typically the new flour, or you look for things that have hashgacha for yashan. It all depends upon the time of the year, and so that is what the Mishnah says. Chadash applies in Chutz Laretz min haTorah. Orla applies in Chutz Laretz halacha. We'll talk about the minute what that means. And finally, kilayah kerem, only kilayim in the kerem, and the way we end up ruling It has to be two species of grain, which are already kelayim, let's say wheat and barley, in the kerem, so it's really three things together, that you are not allowed to plant in chutz la'aretz. Now, orla is the interesting one. The Mishnah says orla is halacha. What is halacha? So the Gemara in the Bavli in Kiddushin, at the end of the first parah, quotes a debate as to what halacha means. One position, which is the one that's accepted, is that it is halacha l'moshe misinai, that it is daraisa, but it doesn't have a scriptural basis. The other is that it's hilchos medina. It's rabbinic. It's a minhag. So we pasken that orlam chutz laretz is midaraisa. It's halacha l'moshe misinai. However, there is one leniency that came along, halacha l'moshe misinai, with the prohibition, which is whenever there is any doubt whatsoever, translate, if you don't see it being picked with your own eyes, you are allowed to consume it and you don't have to worry about orla.
Anything in the supermarket is fine.
Correct. And yes. And the reality is not too many trees anyway produce fruits that are edible in the first 3 years. And it isn't typical. I don't know if there may be certain kinds of things that tend to be smaller. I don't know, maybe blueberries do. I have no idea. I once tried planting berry bushes. Imagine it. They didn't even make it for the next season. So I never sow blueberries. I don't know, but you know, maybe some of the smaller ones, but if you plant an apple tree from seed, you're not getting fruits in the first 3 years. So, well, again, with the kinds of trees that it would be a problem. Again, it could just be me. It could be for everybody else. It produces, you know, fruits and, you know, but,
just from a practical standpoint, let's say you did blueberries and in year two you started getting fruit. What
yeah.
Do you do?
We'll just leave them to rot. Theoretically, you're supposed to burn them. Pick and burn, yeah. So orla applies to fruit trees and chutz laretz, but anytime there's a suffix, it's permitted. And as we will see in a moment, the Gemara is going to assume it doesn't matter whether the suffix is in mitzius, in realia, meaning is this from a tree that was planted in the last 3 years, or if it's a machlokes, what the did is, whether orla applies to a particular situation, and then chutz laretz, suffix orla is mutar. Okay. So with that backdrop, now the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, ask the question. Let's find my place and then tell you where we are again. So it's the last word on the line. It's about, I don't know, 12, 13 lines up. V'neima halacha k'Rabbi Akiva. Why did Rav say that in chutz la'aretz, you throw away the avionos and you can eat the kafrisim? Just say, we paskin like Rabbi Akiva. Why does he need to spell that out? The name halacha k'Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara says, no. I amar halacha k'Rabbi Akiva, hava min afilu ba'aretz. Kamash malon. If he had said halacha k'Rabbi Akiva, I would have assumed that even in Eretz Yisrael, you can eat the capers. You can eat the kafrisim. You just can't eat the caper berries because he paskin like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is in the Mishnah. He's writing in Eretz Yisrael. He's telling you what the din is. He's not, he's talking about Trumas and Maisus, granted, but you would assume if you only have to separate Trumas and Maisus from the Avionos for Rabbi Akiva, there's nothing else of the caper bush that's considered fruit, that's considered, you know, part of the plant, that's edible. So the Gemara says that no, if he told you, and we don't paskin like Rabbi Akiva in Eretz Yisrael, because the reason we paskin like Rabbi Akiva in Chutz Laretz is because there's a rule, called Amekel Ba'aretz Halacha Kamosa B'Chutz Laretz. Anyone who is lenient in, any kind of machlokes in Eretz Yisrael, what the din is, we follow that position in Chutz Laretz. Aval Ba'aretz, lo, you don't necessarily follow that in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, we might not follow Rabbi Akiva's opinion. We might be machmir for Rabbi Eliezer. So this is why I mentioned before that when it comes to kilay hakeren, the kilayim that involves the grape seed, that involves the vineyard, so it's the reason why the Chachamim made exera on that, only on that kilayim outside of the land of Israel, is because the Torah prohibits it b'hanah. If you go in Eretz Yisrael, if you plant a wheat seed and a barley seed together, you're not allowed to plant it. You're not allowed to leave it there growing, but if it happened on its own, or you left it there, whatever you did, or you did it, you're allowed to eat the byproduct. There's no prohibition of eating the byproduct. The prohibition is on planting or leaving it growing. By kiloya kerem, the prohibition is even on getting hana. You have to burn, like orla and kiloya kerem, you have to burn. So because it's more severe in Eretz Yisrael, it applies in chutz laretz as well. Just one note that I should make so nobody walks away misled. Even though other forms of kilayim do not apply outside of Israel, grafting of trees is prohibited everywhere. And in grafting between two species, is asur midoraisa everywhere, in the same way that grafting to animals, I use that term, crossbreeding to animals that are kelayim, and just like shatnez, those three of the, there are five kinds of kelayim. Shatnez, harkavas behema, crossbreeding to animals that aren't of the same, or close enough in species to be one min. Grafting fruit trees, plantings, rhyme, mixed together, you know, wheat and barley, two different species, and then kelaya kerem. The first three apply everywhere in midoraisa, no question. What? Well, it's a machlokas. Some say one wheat seed or one vegetable in the vineyard is considered kilaya kamidaraisa. We learned earlier in the Masechta, in the third parak, one of the three major leniencies that the Zakenim had, that the Minog Yisrael was to follow these three leniencies, and the halachas krabiosia, that krabiosia says it's not midaraisa, it's not kilaya kerem, until you plant kilayim in the kerem. So, ad sheyizra chita usora v'chartzon, you can look at it. I think it's it has to be two species that are kelayim with one another plus the grape seed. That makes it kelaya kerem midoraisa. Okay?
Yeah. Hold on, just on the graft.
You're allowed to eat the its product, but you're not allowed to graft.
So someone else does it.
If it's been done already, yes, you can benefit from it. Yes. Yes. But it is. It is harkavas ilan is asum chutz laretz. It's like shatnez. It's compared to harkavas behema. And harkavas behema obviously is not limited to Israel. It's not an agricultural mitzvah. So the only two kinds of kilayim that midaraisa do not apply outside of the land of Israel are kilaya kerem, which does apply rabbinically, and kilay zraim, which does not apply at all. Now, I had this actually, you wonder, you get this is a shot I got from my student Yosef Gillers, one of the directors of Grow Torah, where he asked me, he had some type of grapes planted, and nearby were growing under barley or wheat or something like that. Not industrial scale, and he said he realized, is this a problem? Does it need something in between? And the answer is no, because since we paskin like Rabbi Yoshia, that you need chita usora v'chartza mapoles yad, and therefore the rest of it is the Rabbanon, even in Eretz Yisrael. So in Chutz La'aretz, the Rama says, it's only usher if you have what would have been Darais in Eretz Yisrael, so therefore it's not a problem. But Kilaya Kerem in Chutz La'aretz, what it does apply, meaning all three different seeds together, that's only with the Rabbanon. So Orla again, Orla is mutter in Sveiko, it's usher in Chutz La'aretz, but Sveiko is mutter. So, the rule the Gemara has here is that if you make an Eretz Yisrael, we may not paskin like you in Eretz Yisrael because it might be a daraisa, sveika daraisa, but in Chutz La'aretz we're going to be lenient like you. So now the Gemara says, okay, and therefore, had Rav said, halacha ki Rabbi Akiva, we would have thought you paskin with Rabbi Akiva even in the land of Israel. So that's why he said, in Chutz La'aretz you throw out the avionos and you can eat the kafris. So now the Gemara says, so why don't we just say at least give credit to Rabbi Akiva, we pass on to Rabbi Akiva, but in Chutz La'aretz, because since he's making in the land of Israel, we'll follow his opinion outside the land of Israel. So the Gemara says no, because you would have said that we only follow Rabbi Akiva's opinion in Chutz La'aretz with respect to Trumas and Maestros, that only the Avionos require separation of Trumas and Maestros, by Trumas and Maestros that are only the Rabbanon in the first place in the land of Israel, because it's not Dagon, Tirosh, V'Yitzar. It's not any of the three species that are Chayiv. So therefore, I would have said that when it comes to Trumas and Maestros, you can rely upon Rabbi Akiva in Chutz La'aretz. But now when it comes to Orla, which Orla on a caper bush in Eretz Yisrael is Midaraisa. So there I would have thought you can't rely upon Chutz La'aretz, so that we wouldn't rely upon even though, and therefore, Hamash Malan, that you are, not just with respect to Trumas and Maestros, do we say that in Chutz La'aretz you only have to separate from the Avionos, but even with respect to Orla, you can eat the Kafris in Chutz La'aretz of Orla, you just can't eat the Avionos. Okay. So I'm going to stop here. We're still in the middle of this, but there's more to come on this particular topic. So you have to hold the thought until next Sunday. All right. Any questions?
Yeah.
Lamasa, what does it mean if an almond milk is 4 years?